If we talk up, why, it'll be just fine. This is October the 22nd, 1985, and we're going to do an oral history tape with Mrs. Avesta McGonigal, whose parents were the settlers in this area, and we are in the history room of Canyon City Library. Let's check it. Okay, we're ready to go. What is your full name?
Avesta Beatrice.
Go ahead.
Maiden name was Valdick. McGonigal.
You were married before you married McGonigal. Your children's name then is?
Seely.
Seely.
S-E-E-L-E-Y.
And that's the one that we're going to write your children down
under. Yes, that's right.
Okay. What are the names of the following members of your family? Your husband's name?
It's Melvin Frank Seely.
And do you know where he was born?
He was born in Pueblo, Colorado.
And the date of his birth?
October the 1st, 1907.
And your mother's name?
Avesta.
Avesta.
It's Lottie. Lottie Avesta.
Lottie Avesta. Okay, Lottie Avesta.
Lottie Avesta. Yeah. The maiden name was Laws, L-A-W-S.
You need to speak up a little bit more, I think, for us to record. Now, your children's names, let's see, I guess that's, this apparently is where you're supposed to pick up your family's name, their children's name, because that's your father down here, so were there other children in the family?
Yeah. In
your...
Yes, one.
Did you have siblings?
I had one sibling.
Yeah.
Frida. Valdick.
And her name was Valdick then. And I heard ask brothers and sisters, so maybe that was supposed to pick up your children's names after all. Your father's name?
George Charles Valdick.
And
he was born at Hillside, Colorado, in Custer County.
In Custer County. The date, approximately?
June the 29th, 1873.
Okay. Do you remember your grandmother's name? Well, your mother's mother, I guess.
My mother?
Could be.
My grandmother?
Yeah, your grandmother's.
Well, my grandmother was Avesta Ann Anderson Laws.
And your grandfather's name?
Joseph Matthew Laws. He went by the name of Joe.
And were they born in this area?
No, they were born in... My grandmother was born in Iowa. And I think my grandfather was born in Indiana.
I think so. Were your parents natives of this area?
Well, my father was. He was born in Custer County.
Okay.
And, not too long after the colony came to the Wet Mountain Valley.
Did we get his,
he was born in...
Yeah, we have Hillside, 73. Did the family's birthplace have any direct effect on your life?
Well, I suppose any birthplace has an effect on any children's lives. My mother's grandfather's family, my mother's father's family, came over into the Virginia colony, and we were subjected to quite a lot of the kind of things that the southern people did. And my father's parents had come from Germany, and naturally he had a lot of background from the old country, and so I suppose that we got a smattering of both. I know during the World War I in 1914, we had the Ku Klux Klan around. My dad had talked a little bit of German. His stepmother, who had come into the family when he was quite young, probably 8 or 10 years old, had been from England and from Wales, and she talked nothing but English, and so he knew more English than some of the older children in the family did. But he said we wouldn't talk any more German because there were Ku Klux Klan was painting crosses on German people's lawns around Rocky Ford, and that's where we were living at that time. And we just didn't think we'd like to have our barn burned.
Then you feel that there was quite a good deal of feeling against the German people among other. Well, now, was this among people who considered themselves more American or more English?
I think it was anybody that had a German-sounding name. We were living in Rocky Ford, and there were a lot of Russian families there. Sometimes these people who were so terribly against Germany couldn't tell the Russian names from the German names. And sometimes the Russian people, and at that time, of course, Russia wasn't involved in the war. And they got looked down on just like the German people did. And it was noticeable in school. It was noticeable everywhere.
Do you know that if there was any particular discrimination against the German people in the Wet Mountain Valley, since that was a place that at least part of it had been settled by colony?
I don't think so. I never heard of it. I had relatives, quite a good many relatives up there, and cousins that we visited back and forth with. I never remember ever hearing them say anything about it because most of those people up there were either German or their families were involved in German things. And I don't know how much the World War I affected those people up there. Couldn't travel very much at that time, so you didn't do much going back and forth. Transportation was about as difficult then as it got to be in World War II.
Though you were born not too far away, about when did you come to Fremont County then?
I came to Fremont County about the time I was 4, which was in 1908, and we came down, I think about the 1st of March, we came. Dad moved us down with a team of horses and wagons. He had been a freighter up in Westcliff, and he still had his freight wagon. And I remember them loading all our things in the freight wagon, and I guess he made more than one trip. And my Uncle Will, who lived in Westcliff, was his brother, and he helped him move. And my mother drove a horse named Rob. It was a gray horse. And a buggy, and we came down. I remember we stopped and picnicked at the basin, and I thought that was great because I knew my dad had always stopped there when he'd been freighting. And we ate our picnic lunch, and then we got back in our buggy and came on down. My grandmother and aunt were living out on 4 Mile, and we were moving into the same house that they had been living in, and then they were moving into town. And I had been there before, so I kind of felt at home. I remember my mother and my aunt repapered the whole house. It was a big house, had 8 rooms in it. And they repapered the whole house, and I remember getting into all kinds of trouble because I wanted to paper, help them paper. And so finally, they gave me some scraps of paper, and we used flour paste in those days. They made themselves. And they let me paste little dabs of paper on where they hadn't gotten yet. And once I got busy and pasted where they had gotten, and I was in trouble with my mother. But we lived there then 8 years, and my sister was born there.
Do you know if that house is still standing at
sure,
all?
Yes, it's standing. It's been moved. It's up by the railroad track, the Denver and Rio Grande Railroad track on McKenzie. I guess that's McKenzie Avenue anymore. And it sat down on the river, and it got awfully close to the water line after we left it. And it was moved not too many years after we moved to Rocky Ford, maybe as much as four. And it's still there. And it looks pretty much like it did.
So that white house by the railroad track across from what's the gravel pit now in 1895?
Well, that area,
1985?
Yeah.
And I know there is a white house that sits there by the railroad track.
Well, they haven't changed it very much. They turned it around. My dad had built on a porch on the back, and now that porch is in the front, which faces the east. And when he built it on, it faced the east, but they changed it quite a bit. But it's the same old house.
Have you lived in other homes in this area besides where you're staying now, or this one out on 4 Mile?
No, not really.
The red house.
Oh, yes. Well, my grandmother and aunt took care of my uncle's places for him, and he was a farmer. And when he would rent a place to farm, well, if it had a house on it, he'd move them into it. That way they had cheap rent, and he had his place looked after. So I lived lived out on Fay once upon a time, and that house has been remodeled, and the top part has been taken off, is made into a one-room house, or one-floor house now. And then we lived in the stone house that's part of the Rudd Museum now. And that was a fun house.
You mean the Rudd house?
Yeah,
the one that Anson Rudd built?
Yes, the stone house. It was a fun house because there was a long porch on the back, and the house was kind of on a hill, and there was a downstairs. It wasn't a basement, but in the front it didn't show, but in the back it went back into the hill, and people lived in it. And we could go out on this porch and watch the DNRG trains go up and down. And that time, they used to carry an extra car on the back that was an observation car. It was open in the top. You just sat in seats. And people rode that through the Royal Gorge. I think it was taken off of a Salida. And the ladies... That was way back when people still used handkerchiefs, and the ladies would wave their white handkerchiefs at us, and of course we were delighted to wave back. And there'd be two or three of those go through. And so in the afternoons in the summertime, we happened to be there. We had a lot of fun. I had a couple of cousins that visited a lot, and we played together a lot. And the four of us would really enjoy ourselves out on that porch.
Do you remember any other house that they may have lived in the area that was interesting?
They lived in one up in Garden Park. It was across from where the schoolhouse was and still is. Of course, it's not in use anymore. But that was kind of a fun place, too, because it was so pretty up there.
Was that by any chance the one that was moved to Buckskin Joe that the Sages had lived in at one time? I think that's written up in Rosemary Campbell's From Trappers to Tourists.
Well, I know that the Sages owned that place, and I expect they built that house.
It's not too far from the Garden Park Cemetery, is it?
No, it isn't. And that's the one that was moved down. I think we always like to look over there in Buskin Joe's street and think about that house, and it's, you see it in pictures a lot of times. It was a pretty good house for a rural area like that.
It was two-story?
Yes.
I think I read in her book which house it is, up at Buckskin Joe's. No, it's not the saddle shop, it's something else. Do you remember stores where your family shopped in Cayenne City?
Well, we shopped at Wright & Morgan's, and I think that I thought it was a grocery store. I know they bought groceries in it, but I was looking in a old book the other day that said that it was actually a meat market, but I know they sold groceries. My mother used to take me in there, and she knew all these people because she'd lived around Canyon quite a long time, and people knew her. And so this butcher, and I don't know what his name was, would give me a wiener. And I didn't really like wieners, but I was not going to let him know I didn't like them. So I always took them, and you'd have to take a bite of them because he was looking at you. And as soon as I'd get outside, I'd get my mother to put it someplace that I could take it home. I don't think I ate it. I don't know what happened to it, but he always gave me one every time I went in that store. And sometimes I almost wished I didn't go in. One time I'd fallen down and bumped my nose, and it was all skinned up. And he teased me about it, and he said, "Well, your nose looks almost like my wiener's." And I just hated
you
where
my wiener's at. That was bad. Were there other stores that you remember that were in?
We always got our
shoes all on Main Street.
Yeah, on Main Street. Mm-hmm. We always got our shoes at Galley's because Mother wanted us to have good feet when we grew up. And I've been real thankful lots of times. And I guess the shoes cost more because my father thought we could have lived with a little bit cheaper shoes. But my mother always got them there. And even after we moved away from Canyon, she'd plan to buy shoes for us when she'd bring us back up. And then Ox Candy Store was my very most favorite place because they had the best butterscotch candy, hard candy, in little round circles. And I just loved them. And Mother would always let me have a few of those. And so that was always my favorite place. And those were real treats. We didn't get them very often. And then
Ott's was in business a lot of years, wasn't it? Seems
yes.
to me I remember Ott's way up until the 50s.
Oh,
or
they were in business after
maybe
they
early
moved away.
60s?
I might have been. I don't know. But I know they were still in business when we used to come up to visit the Seeleys. And when they lived here, that was after I had a couple of my children. And then we Fry & Collins was real important to me because I ran around with Gertrude Fry, and we'd go down to the store, and he'd let us have his old pattern books so that we could cut out paper dolls. And we had gorgeous paper doll books, and we had so many things to choose from that we would be able to find a doll that we liked real well and then hunt dresses that would fit in the direction that that doll faced. And then we had big books, these other big books, that we'd slip our dolls into. And we just played with paper dolls practically all the time we played. And at that time, my grandmother and aunt were living down on River Street in the Rudd House, and they lived up on Harrison, so it was a case of getting together. We went to Washington School, which is about halfway between, and so
now would you stop just a minute and tell us where Washington School
Washington
was?
Washington School was on Macon Avenue. It's where the courthouse is now, the very block.
The old Washington
yes,
School.
The old Washington
yeah.
School.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yes, this was way back in 1912, 13, 14, long back in there. So it was that building wasn't torn out until they built the courthouse. And one evening we'd go up to her house, and the next evening we'd go down to my house, and we played paper dolls practically all the time. It was a great life for kids.
Do you remember any special things about school besides that that you would like to relate?
Well, I went to Four Mile School, which was out in the country. Our house was between the two railroad tracks, And that was the Santa Fe track and the river on the south and the DNRG on the north. And I had to cross the DNRG tracks to get to school. And the school sat back on a ditch, a big Arroyo type of ditch. And you had to cross, you had to either go out on the highway and then go back, or you went up a back road. And
did you ever hear that called, pardon me, did you ever hear that called Mud Gulch?
No, I don't know anything about what it was named. It's still around. It's still there.
Well, we had an oral tape, and they talked about that Arroyo out there and called it Mud Gulch.
Could be.
And I wondered if that was the same one.
It probably is. Dad's irrigation water came down, if I know that.
Uh-huh.
And so it was turned out of some ditch someplace down into that, and he had a head gate up by the DNRG, where the DNRG track covered this, went across this little back road. And so I didn't start school until I was 7 and a half. And mother taught me, mother was a teacher. She taught me at home that first year. Then I went to 4 Mile, and I spent a few months in the first grade, and then they put me in second grade, and I finished second grade. And Marjorie Kirkton was my teacher, and the Kirktons lived here in Canyon, and they were in the fruit business, wholesale business, and have been there. They've been around a long time. And she rode horseback out to school, and she always rode with a skirt that divided. When she'd get to school, she'd button the skirt all up and make a whole skirt out of it. When she rode the horse, she divided it, so she had a divided skirt. And I just thought that was pretty fascinating. Then the next year, I had Elizabeth Keyes, K-E-Y-E-S, for a teacher. And then I came in to stay with my grandmother and aunt and went to Jefferson School. And I had Mrs. Underwood, and I noticed that she was teaching later at the Washington School in some old material I was looking at lately. And then in fifth grade, I went to Washington School, and I had Ms. Sherman for a teacher. Then in sixth grade, I had Mr. Logan, and I had some other teachers too. And he was principal, and he also taught some subjects. Then in the middle of the year,
The Mr. Logan that comes to the history room sometimes?
Well,
he was a teacher.
I don't know. And the idea, his name's in one of these books. And then we moved right forward.
Oh. Yeah, you mentioned that your mother had lived around Canyon for some time, and that she was a teacher, and that she taught you at home. Did she teach in this area at all?
Well, she taught up in the Westcliff area. That's where she met my dad. And she boarded with my dad's family. And then she taught in Westcliff. That was the last year she taught before she was married. And then she had taught at Brush Creek and Texas Creek and Marigold.
Oh, now,
which was up
every once in a while we hear about Marigold, but we never can find it. Do you know anything about Marigold?
Well, it was on the old road that, what do they call that road that goes up to Cripple Creek? That's
the old, it was a toll road at that time, would imagine.
It was a toll road.
And
she just talked that one
she
year.
She live at the toll station? There was a, Canterbury's had the toll station.
Well, no, she didn't live at Canterbury. She lived with somebody that went around prospecting. He and his wife were gone a good part of the time prospecting. And I don't remember their name. I'm sure I heard it.
But we call it the Shelf Road now.
It's the Shelf Road, yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's see, the other places were probably in Custer County, then Texas Creek, you said.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And Marigold.
And Brush Creek. And
where was Brush Creek? Brush Creek was in Custer County.
Yes.
And so many of these names are.
It was down Torch Hillside.
Oh.
From Westcliff.
Oh, Greenleaf.
Yes, she taught Greenleaf. But she taught also.
I know there's a Greenleaf school an old school in Westcliff.
She taught in Westcliff.
Now, what kind of jobs have you held?
Well, I started teaching in Children's Park in Custer County in 1924. I'd been in college, the banks in 1923 and 24 were not in very good shape. We had kind of a recession, and the bank went broke, or closed anyway, and nobody got any money out of it much, and so there wasn't money for me to go on to school. I had a scholarship, but it didn't pay board and room, and I'd worked for my board, and I just had reached a point where I just wasn't able to make it, and so Mother sold some chickens and got me home, and I went down to the Otero County courthouse at Lahana and took the, in those days you could take an examination and teach, and they had, they were just limited to 2 or 3 years. Then you either had to take another examination or hope that you'd gone to college and gotten enough education that you'd have a teaching certificate. So I took the examinations, and they offered me Silver Park and Junkins Park. And I didn't know anything about either one of them, but I found out that some people from Pueblo were up in the Junkins Park area and were raising lettuce. They'd just gone up there to raise lettuce. And I thought, well, that sounded like a pretty good place because there'd be people from Pueblo there. And so I took the Junkins Park job, paid $5 or more a month too, and then they let you do your own janitoring, and that gave you another $5, and I was making $80. And so that sounded like a pretty good thing to me. And it was pretty good because I was able to save enough money to go back to college for a quarter the next winter.
Then this was a summer school, pardon me?
Yeah, it's a 6-month summer school.
6-month summer school, mm-hmm. Okay.
And these were what most of the ones in Custer County were that were in the mountains because there's no way of kids getting to school.
Do you think your mother had taught mostly summer schools, or were those winter schools up there at that
time? Well, I don't know. Texas Creek was a winter school, I know. And I think Brush Creek was. It was up there towards Hillside, and you could get in now.
Mm-hmm.
But and Marigold was winter school because she got snowed in. But other than that, they may have been summer schools because that's what they had.
And there were lots of summer schools
there,
still.
Yes, they were still there when I got there, you see, which was good many years later.
30 years, 20 years, some years later.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, I taught 3 summers up at Jones Park. Then I taught 1 year down at the Adobe, in closer to the West Cliff. And finally I got my education finished up, got 2-year life certificate, which I thought was pretty good. Found out that it wasn't as good as it sounded. We had to have more education, more education, more education, or teach. Finally, in 1936, I got my Bachelor of Arts degree from Gunnison Western State College. And I taught until 1943. And then, I stopped and had a couple of my children. But I taught quite a bit during the time they were small, too. And then I went into the welfare office, did welfare work. Went in September of 41, the war came along just after I got there. And I stayed in the welfare office until, welfare work, till 1955. But meantime, I'd gone to Denver University and taken social work in the field of child welfare, and I was a child welfare worker in Otero County.
Well, you said kids were your hobby, so I can understand now.
Well, then
we
I went back
about.
To teaching and taught until I retired. Then I came up here to Kansas City to live and worked in the library.
This library?
The Kansas City Public Library, yes.
This library. I think I missed one thing back here. We talked about your mother was a teacher and a housewife. Your father raised fruit. What, he was a rancher?
Rancher.
You'd say it was a rancher.
He was a cattle rancher in Westcliff, and his father was a cattle rancher ahead of him. And then when he came to Canyon, he had about 20 acres of land, most of it in fruit. And that was what he did here.
Now, you did mention somewhere back there that he had brought you down on a freight wagon. Can you tell us anything about, I assume this was before they were married or that kind.
Well, he had, yes.
That he had
freighted. I don't think he did much freighting. His brother got married about 2 years. He and his brother Will worked together on the freight business, and his brother got married 2 or 3 years before he did. And I think they probably folded the freight business up when my Uncle Will got married, because they had to be away from home too much. And they both ranched. They ranched on ranches that were next door to each other. And they could go from one man's field to the other man's field down in the corner of the place that was farthest away from the houses. And they were actually cornered. And then my dad farmed that place until I was 4. And that was I was born there, so it must have been about 4 years that he lived there. And then when we came to Canyon City, he raised fruit. And he worked for the ditch company sometimes and worked for the city whenever they'd have a fair. He used to always run the water wagon and spray the streets and Main Street and out. Spray around the racetrack and things like that.
Now, where was the racetrack at that time?
Well, the racetrack is not there anymore. In fact, I guess it's covered with houses.
Was it south of town?
It was north of town.
Oh, it was north of town.
Way out there. It was just about out to that Orchard Park area. I think it was kind of a sluey sort of a place. I think it's probably about where that mobile home court is out there. Towards the Hogbacks.
We have so many of them.
Bessie's friend lives. I think when I drive out there,
I read somewhere that was on North 9th above Harding Manor, which of course is Canyon.
Well,
Lodge now.
It's covered with houses and things now. Mm-hmm. I couldn't just locate it. When we lived on Fay, my grandmother and I used to walk back there to it, and I suppose but she was quite a walker, and she always took me along, and it could have been maybe as much as a half a mile on northwest of where we lived on Fay Avenue, which was just off of 8th Street, and between 7th and 8th. When we moved to Rocky Ford, he farmed.
Oh, yeah.
He had 160 acres.
If they freighted, and you mentioned something about the basin, which I understand is up on the
Oak Creek
grade, a road. I've seen it marked. When were they freighting? I know that they say that the Canyon Hotel, and it was moved down brick by brick, was moved down by freight wagons down Copper Gulch Road. Was this the kind of thing they did?
My dad and my uncle and I don't know how many other freighters moved that, because when we'd go along the street, my dad would tell me that building he helped to move, and they marked the bricks so that they put it back together just the way it was when it was up there. And I guess some of the finishing inside, some of the lumber from the inside was even used. However, I'm sure they used some other lumber too. And they freighted mostly down Oak Creek.
Well, then where did they go?
They came from the Westcliff area, the Silvercliff area, I should say, because Westcliff didn't exist really until the railroad went in, and that was about 1900. And so Silvercliff was the main city up there. They came from there and they hauled potatoes, because Dad talked about peddling them in Rockvale and Chandler and Coal Creek and Williamsburg. And at that time, the Wolf Creek mine apparently wasn't in existence, because he never talked about it.
Wolf Park.
Anyway, even as a kid, before they really freighted, and I suppose that's how they got into it in the first place, their father would send them down to peddle potatoes, and my uncle didn't like to peddle very well, so he'd drive. He was a little 13 months older. He would drive a team. My dad would get out and go from house to house and peddle the potatoes. And then my uncle would help get them out of the wagon and take them into the house. And the people just bought those just by the pounds. I mean, you took a half a sack or a fourth of a sack or a whole sack. And the miners' wives looked forward to them coming with these potatoes. Then they hauled hay down when they got to be real freighters. Lots of hay down, and they brought a lot of it to Florence because they used to deal with the Hadley Mercantile and some of the other places. But they also brought potatoes, and then they took back supplies, coal, and whatever somebody wanted that lived up there. They hauled a lot of coal, and they would get it. They'd sell their potatoes and hay, and then they'd load up coal at the mines and take them back.
You know what mines, or do you remember them ever?
They liked the Chandler mine coal the best because it was the hardest. But they got quite a bit at Rockvale and some at Coal Creek. Coal Creek.
Oh, Coal Creek.
And Williamsburg. Those two places were close together.
See, was the Williamsburg one called the Ocean Wave at that time?
I don't know. Dad always called it Coal Creek.
Yeah.
And my uncle, another uncle, married a Coppethwaite who lived in Coal Creek, and they were miners. And it got so my dad and Uncle Will would go down there sometimes and stay all night with Mrs. Coppethwaite. She had quite a family of children, but she always seemed to have room for a couple more young fellows. And so once in a while, they'd stay there with them. And he was a miner, and they were from Wales.
Okay. What do you remember about the Depression? Apparently, you were back up teaching in this area by that time.
No. I was married. I had two children. We were living in we had been up and raised potatoes out in the south part of the valley, dry land. Focus was the name
valley?
Of the town. What Mountain Valley? Focus was the name of the town. It isn't there anymore. And my husband's people had owned land out in there, and we farmed with them couple of years, but it wasn't a very good business because potatoes weren't worth much of anything, and finally we moved back down to Rocky Ford, and he just worked down there for the sugar beet company.
Did you know people on RE for the WPA or the Triple C camps of this area?
Well, yes. Finally, his dad, Frank Seeley, they used to put on one, they hired one man for every 10 that was on WPA, and he was quite a fine carpenter, and they hired him as the one man that was up in this area, Custer County, and then later he went over to Gunnison County and did the same kind of thing, and my husband worked in the timber, and that was also, one man was hired and 10 WPA workers worked under them, and they called them supervisors, and they got, I think, a nickel more an hour than the WPA workers got, and it was paid from a different fund. But so we had a taste of WPA times, and we also had quite a taste of not having much of anything. If my dad hadn't been a farmer, I expect we'd got mighty hungry, but we managed to salvage enough beans and tomatoes and things like that off the farm. My grown-up kids don't like beans and tomatoes very much to this day. They say they ate enough of them during the Depression, lasting the rest of their lives. And I suspect that was true.
Do you remember anything about labor strikes or...
I remember the one in 1914, whatever that the mining strike was. We were living out on Fay Avenue. It was before 14, I guess it was maybe 12 or 13. We were living out on Fay. I was living with my aunt and grandmother out on Fay Avenue, and they brought in the militia and parked them out in the fairgrounds. I was scared to death. They had great big guns. They pulled them with mules, and they would had tents set up out there. And my uncle was running the store over at the Wolf Park, well, where Prospect Heights is now. That mercantile store there at Prospect Heights was the one he was running. It was a grocery, and it was run under the auspices of the mining company. It was one of those mining stores that you remember about, everybody remembers hearing about. And Tennessee Ernie Ford, I guess, had a good song he sang about that one, and it was
I
certainly
owe my
truth.
Soul to the company
yes,
store.
Yes, that was the one.
That was the one.
It was a truth,
yeah.
Too.
And load 16 tons.
Yes.
What do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. Oh,
well,
yes, I remember that one.
Yes, that was what the miners were wanting, was a little bit more money so they wouldn't have to be quite so deep in debt. Well, what they really wanted was to be working the year round instead of a few months. But that was pretty bad. And I know my parents were down on 4 Mile at that time. And so I'd be in town most of the time, and then I'd go out there. And I know my uncle came down and told my parents to be real careful because there was getting to be a lot of shooting between the coal camps and Wolf Creek. Wolf Park was involved in it, and of course he was involved in it too. I remember how scared I was, and I don't know how they settled it. I just remember that finally the militia moved away and things settled down. But I was pretty
young. You
were
too young to remember.
Yeah, but I can remember
how
that much
battle. Well, it would make an impression
yes.
on a kid that age.
Sure.
No, on any kid that age. What community groups or fraternal organizations or churches did you and your parents attend?
Well, we attended the Methodist Church. My dad had been raised a Lutheran. And after he came down to Canyon City, he felt like that we all should go to the same church, and Mother had always been Methodist. In fact, there were Methodist ministers involved in her family. So we went to the Methodist church, and I grew up doing the things that all kids do that go to Sunday school and church.
Did he belong to lodges or anything of that
he
kind?
He was a Woodman of the World and Odd Fellow. And when they built the original Oddfellow home, Oddfellow's home out here on 15th Street, he was a pretty active member in the lodge, and I know he went out there, and there were business meetings about it, and he went to them. And then it wasn't finished yet when he took us out there to see it. And he said, I remember him saying to me, now if anything had happened to me and there wouldn't be anybody to take care of you, they'll take care of you out here. And at that time they had children. And I was scared to death. I thought, oh dear, I don't think this is a place I ever want to see ever again. But fortunately, I didn't ever have to go there.
Well, of course, it's considerably enlarged, and Hildebrand's one of our fine nursing homes, which is connected to the Oddfellows.
Well,
so,
it was
wouldn't be too bad a place to be, maybe.
It wasn't too bad a place then, I'm sure, for older people, because they either had to go to the county farm or they had to find some place like that, and they were better off there than they were at the county farm, I assume, since people said they were.
Did you ever, there were other families, you said your cousins were on the back porch of the
yeah.
lower porch of the, what
yeah.
have you, the south porch of the Red House. Did your families, they get together very often, and if they did, what kind of things did you do and so forth?
Well, there were four families of it, but there were really five families, my aunt and grandmother. My grandfather had died when I was very, very small, and there were three Laws families that lived around, and then, of course, our family, my mother was Laws.
Now, were they people from around here who also
yes.
had families in the area?
Oh, yes.
Who were they?
James Laws was married to Laura Lowther, L-O-U-W-T-H-E-R, I believe
is where they spelled it. Well, I saw Lowther Cemetery, stones up in the cemetery in the old Greenwood Cemetery the other day.
They're all related. And they had two children, two sons. And Raymond, the older one, and I were pretty close. We were a couple of years apart in age. Then there was John Laws, and he married Addie Dryden. They had three girls.
See, now, the Drydens were connected with house-building contractor, yeah. I noticed in the
Grandpa
directory.
Dryden was a very fine carpenter and did really nice cabinet work in his houses. He built
houses.
He built on his own. He hired help and took contracts. And then for a while, when I was pretty small, Uncle Andrew's family, they were Laws too, had come from Missouri, and their children were older. He was the oldest child in the family, and their children were older. And they moved away and went to New Mexico when I was about 8. But before that, they had 6 children, and we'd all get together for all the holidays at my grandmother's and aunt's house. And we had family dinners, and we kids, of course, looked forward to when we'd get a chance to play together because transportation wasn't the same then as now.
Interruption here. Did you say there was one other Laws that was living?
Yes, Sam Laws married Nellie Burrage, B-U-R-R-A-G-E.
We have a Burrage building somewhere
in town? Yes, that was her father's building.
Oh.
Actually, Nellie was an adopted child. They had one son by the name of Will, and he was quite a bit older than she was, and then they adopted this little girl. Now, I don't know anything about the background for that or anything. They left when I was reasonably small, probably 2-3 years old, but they had 2 children. One of them was named Burrage for a first name, and then the next one down was William, and he and I were about the same age. And then they had 4 more children after they went out to Portland, Oregon. I think they went to Seattle first and then moved down to Portland, but they really raised their family in Portland, Oregon. Will Burrage had gone out there ahead of them.
Oh.
I think they were all involved in geology and mining and that kind of thing. I'm sure there's a lot of records around Canyon City that tell lots more than I could possibly tell.
I remember seeing Will Burrage's name. He was a surveyor or something of that kind?
He was a geologist, but he may have been a surveyor too.
And then I remember
involved in mining.
In Picturesque Canyon, which is a little book that we found when we opened the room, there was a Burrage house listed and said that Mr. Burrage was one of the outstanding citizens that built building on Main Street and so forth.
Yes, he has a building. There's still names on the buildings downtown there yet. And he built that building. He was a leading citizen. And I didn't know them very well.
Do you remember the first telephone?
Well, I remember the first telephone. The first telephone I remember, let's put it that way, were hung on the wall, and you had to crank it up to get central. And our number was white. And I've been trying to think what the rest of the number was. It seemed like it was 234, but I could be wrong about that. And
was this here in Canyon?
Oh, it was out
on
the ranch.
4 Mile.
They were not very many people had telephones.
Oh.
They were not very, they were kind of new and expensive, and I guess they were expensive. I suppose they were expensive, what you had to use for money in those days.
But did you say white, or how were these color-coded?
Yes, you rang up Central, and she said, number, please, and you wanted somebody, you could either call the blue line and the red line or the white line, and then you gave her the 2 or 3 three figures after that, and then she rung it up, and there were all lots of people on the lines, and you had an awful time getting a hold of. Well, to get 2 lines that were not busy at the same time was really interesting. My father used to get pretty unhappy. He'd try to call somebody in town about fruit that he'd raised or something and couldn't get the lines. He'd be pretty unhappy. He used to say sometimes, I could go to town and see him in the time it takes to get this telephone to work. And my mother'd say, well, now, After all, you're fortunate to have a telephone, and sometimes you kind of stomped out of the house. But there were about 60 or 20 people on the lines, and the telephone poles out where we lived were just little sharp things, and the line was kind of nailed along on them, and the people that used it had to keep them up. And if they fell down, why, you didn't have any service, and you had to go out and hunt the place and fix it. And that was the way it worked.
In other words, they didn't have a telephone company that came out and repaired.
No, they had some. They had a place in town on Main Street that was upstairs in a red building. And I guess it must have been down in there across from now where they, well, they've torn it out lately, where they was, it used to be a mortuary, and then the senior citizens took it over.
Oh.
And I think it was across, I think it was in that block, about middle of the block, and they, we all, Mother always went upstairs to pay the bill.
Where maybe Gobin's are, or somewhere along
no,
there now.
No, it was farther uptown.
Oh.
It was, I don't know what's there now. I've looked at along that block and tried to figure out just where it was. And the whole building apparently is torn out. It was a red brick building.
600 block rather than the 700 probably.
Probably.
Yeah. Because, let's see.
It was the next block
the Methodist
down
church
from where the
Canyon
Hotel
so,
is where it was. About the middle of the block.
That'd be the 600.
The whole building, I'm sure, was a telephone building.
Oh.
And they undoubtedly kept their equipment and things. But we paid our bill upstairs. And because I would go up with Mother.
When we were talking about family gatherings, I sort of went by the question of what kind of, when you had these family gatherings, as I know that you did, were these usually holidays, and what kind of food did you
have? Oh, they were always holidays. Nobody had time to go and put in a day of doing nothing except on holidays. I suppose we probably saw each other on Sundays, but not big family deals. They were always holidays. Well, we always had turkey on Thanksgiving, and my grandmother still had all the dishes that she brought from Missouri with her, and she kept them up in the top of the cupboard. So one of the big deals for me was to help Grandma get the dishes down. They always had to be washed and dried, all of them, every one of them, whether we used them or not, and then she'd stack them on a table. And we'd do this 2 days before the big deal. My aunt had an old steamer that you set on top of the stove. Of course, these were coal stoves, you know. And I suppose the thing was 3 feet high, maybe. I don't know. It seemed like it was awfully high. Anyway, she made plum puddings. Those always got made a day or two ahead, and I thought that was great. I didn't really care much for them because they had soot in them, and it always stuck to the top of my mouth. It wasn't hot enough, but it was fun to watch my aunt do them. And that was a tradition. My daughter still makes that plum pudding every year for Christmas, same recipe. And she gets the same ingredients. And they taste
and
the same.
Stick to the top of your mouth.
I don't know how to get them hot. And put hot. Now we put, Mother and my aunt used to make a hard sauce out of butter and sugar, granulated sugar, and put on them. And if they weren't good and hot, of course that didn't melt. But nowadays we use a softer sauce, and then that way you get by with them.
We're going to have to. I'm going to have to stop for a minute, and we'll be. Okay, we have a pause there, but we were talking about holidays and how they were celebrated and family affairs. Do you have anything you'd like to add to that?
Well, when the families would get together, it was a big day for us youngsters because that was about the only time that we all played, all of the cousins played together. And we used to play ball out in the, where the high school is now. It was an alfalfa field, and in the fall and winter, when we could play baseball out there. And so we made our own games, and that was one of the things that we enjoyed the most because we had room enough and we didn't have any problems with batting a ball into the street or anything. But our good times together always meant a lot to all of us cousins. And I guess that way we were not bothering the adults, and they enjoyed visiting and getting the meal together. And of course, there were always lots of dishes to wash, and we children never had to help with that. So the holidays were one of our most interesting family times, and actually most of our good times for all of us were based around the church and the family gatherings.
Now, that was the Methodist church, or were there other churches involved?
We went to the Methodist church, and Uncle Jim and Aunt Laura and their boys went to Presbyterian church, and Uncle Andrew and his family went to the Christian church. So we didn't all go to the same church, but we all took part in the activities of our own individual churches. And really, there was no problem about it. Sometimes I would go to Sunday school with the cousins who were older that would take me to the Christian church. I'd go to Sunday school and church there. And sometimes they would take me to the Methodist church and I'd stay there. But we did have good times in the church groups, and our parents did too. Okay.
In the line of playing things, what toys do you remember, whether they had toys or you had toys that you especially liked? And you mentioned paper dolls with a friend. Were there other things that you were especially fond of?
Well, I kind of liked outdoor toys more than I did indoor toys. However, in the wintertime, I guess we played indoors. But our summer fun always seemed like it was the most fun. And since I played more with boy cousins than I did with girl cousins, we dug a lot in the dirt and made tunnels and so forth. I don't remember. Don't think we had any little cars or anything like that. I don't remember what we did. I made lots of mud pies. There was a irrigation ditch close to the house, and Mother used to let me take little pans and things that she didn't use anymore, and I would play in the mud all afternoon long, and had a good time doing that. We also could use the alfalfa field to fly kites in the spring, and my cousins were pretty good kite builders. I think their dad and mother probably helped them. And so we would all get our kites together, and they used to make box kites. My kites were all just three-cornered kites, sometimes made with little sticks and newspapers. I know my mother helped me make them, and my dad was always really interested in them too. So we'd have a kite flying episode. And I remember towards the end of the time that we lived in up here, which was 1916, my cousin Raymond Laws said that Marconi had figured out a way of talking and we could hear him on the air. That sounded pretty ridiculous to me. We were out flying kites, and he said, "I wonder if they use kites to get the messages up into the air." We really didn't know much about it. Later on, he built a crystal set, and we were able to hear with headphones Kansas City, which really thrilled us. I guess that must have been the closest station at that time. But that he was quite mechanically minded, and that took up quite a bit of our time. In wintertime especially, we'd go and he'd work on things, and I guess the rest of us kind of looked on. But it was fun. And so those were most of the games and things that we did.
Did you or your cousins have pets that were of any special interest?
Well, they had a horse named Old Chub, and we rode him sometimes. I just wasn't much of a horseback rider at that time, and so pets never appealed to me. I wasn't a pet fan. I had a dog, but I never cared a lot about him. I guess Mother probably fed him. And I did have a cat once that I liked pretty much. Seemed like every time I had a pet that I really got kind of attached to, poor thing always died or got killed. I think it turned me on pets for the rest of my life.
Every area has had, I think, some kind of disasters, and I think the Canyon area, for the most part, our history has not related, except the penitentiary things that were real disasters. Do you remember of any particular disaster or the things that would happen that affected you or your family?
Well, we lived on the river, and right close to the bridge that goes across the river on Mackenzie Avenue. We lived on the north side of the river, and at the time that we moved there, the river current was on the opposite side of the bank, which was the south side. There were lots and lots and lots of little trees on our side, more or less of an island, and the orchard had been built down there. And 4 Mile came in to the river up above us, and it carried quite a lot of water, especially in flood times. And in fact, it was one of our big flood problems. So we would get, in the summertime, we would get water up into this kind of a sandbar area, and we'd be afraid to go down towards the river. And then finally the current changed and washed all of that away, and our orchard was right on the banks of the river, and every year we'd lose a tree or two. We'd cut down under them and go into the river. And my dad built what you call fills that were made out of evergreen trees and rocks, and all winter he'd build these fills to keep the water from washing the crops away, the orchard. And then once in a while we'd get a big flood down the river from up Slide away, and one down 4 Mile, and they'd come together, and then the water would get clear up in the corrals and around our house. And I was just terribly afraid of the floods, because you never knew, they always seemed to come at night. And the water got real high one time, and it backed up several different things, flooded. The big arroyo along the side of the house flooded too, backed the water up on the other side of the railroad track, and you couldn't get out. And my uncle forded the water and came in and tried to get my dad to take us and go up on the railroad track at least along there, but he didn't, and we stayed there all night. And the water got up, the house was built kind of high, about 4 feet or 5 feet off the ground, got up to the porch, and we would never have been able to have gotten out except to waded, and us kids had been carried, I suppose, but it receded, and so we didn't ever get water in the house. But later they moved that house out, and I think we talked about that once before. The floods were bad then. Of course, that's one of the reasons that the dams have been put into the Arkansas River has been to cut the floods down, especially the one up at Twin Lakes. That was one of the first ones, I think, that they did was for irrigation purposes, but it also was a flood control. We weren't here in 1922 when we had the bad floods, but I'm sure that Canyon, I know the South Canyon got a lot of water in around their houses. Some of them, I think, washed away. But it was bad all down the river, and we were at Rock Ford at the time. And water got miles away from the riverbanks.
We haven't mentioned any of the surrounding, close surrounding country, the coal camps we mentioned because of Dad, your father hauling coal down or back from them. Do you remember anything at all about the Penrose area or the Florence and Cripple Creek Railroad, any of that area out to the northeast?
Well, Florence and Cripple Creek Railroad, I think they discontinued about the time we left Canyon City. I don't exactly remember. I remember we went up one time on an excursion up to Cripple Creek. I had another aunt and uncle who lived up there. They were Al and Minnie Gongway, G-O-N-G-W-A-Y, and he was a miner in Cripple Creek. She did, she did dressmaking at that time. Later on, she took some training and became a practical nurse. But at the time that I was speaking about going up on the train and the excursion, so beautiful up through there, I was 7, and I remember how beautiful it was. And my uncle got interested in the Penrose country. It was just beginning to develop at that time. I suppose I must have been about 1912 or 13, probably. And I don't know how they got the land out there. I know it was a development of some kind. And he bought land. He bought land. He didn't homestead it or anything. And I was real interested in the fruit orchards that they were going to put in. And they had just figured out some way of getting water for that area out there. I know my dad wasn't too sure about their water system. He wasn't too sure they were going to have good luck getting enough water to raise orchards. However, he never developed his. He finally sold it. But we went out there one time, and it was pretty much a case of sagebrush and open country at that time. It was pretty sandy. I know my aunt didn't think much of eating a lunch out on the ground in that sandy, dry land. But that was the only time I was out there during that period of settlement. However, in later years, they did have lots of orchards out there, and I guess they still have. At least they advertise apples and so forth, and we go out in there and buy. And then I understand they've put in cherry orchards now, but at that time, they were mostly apples and cherries. And when I was first married, we used to go out there in the summertime and pick cherries. And they would let us say we picked 2 gallons. We gave them 1 gallon, and we took 1 gallon. So we would pick about 100 pounds of cherries for ourselves and an equal amount for the people that owned the orchards. They had a hard time back then getting things picked just like they have now. So they were always glad to have anybody that helped. And I'd had some experience in apple orchards and so forth, and cherries and so on, when I was a kid. So they kind of liked us to pick them because we picked them nice and clean. And that's important if you're going to pick. Some people just pick a few off of a tree and go to another tree and so forth and pick the easy ones. But we were willing to clean the trees. So they had, that was about 1926, 7, 28. So they still had a lot of orchards out in there. And I don't know, the water's always been a problem. I can't tell you how they solved it, but they do have they do have water enough to keep their orchards going, at least.
Oh, yes, they do have a new water system out there that seems to currently be very successful, I am being told.
Well, that was open prairie land. I know my dad said it has to be pretty good soil at the time that we were out there. My uncle had just gotten this land, because you never find sagebrush growing where the land isn't good. So I think that they did have good land to start with. Just water was their problem.
Do you remember any particular stories about the Royal Gorge or anything about the area, any of the floods that took out Grape Creek? That was before your time.
That was before my time. By the time that I remember what happened, they had that dam someplace up 4 Mile. It was the one that was always threatening to break and flood us out. So any of those others were prior to my memory, at least.
We mentioned the Shelf Road back when you were talking about your mother having taught up in that general area. The Shelf Road, of course, that was called Oil Creek originally, and a lot of the old-timers I'm finding still call that Oil Creek rather than 4 Mile. And the tunnels that were draining the mines at Cripple Creek are drained into 4 Mile Creek or Oil Creek. Do you remember of hearing anything about those in connection with the Cripple Creek mining things?
Well, I guess that part of the problems that developed when the mines began to close down involved the water that got into them, so that they really couldn't mine efficiently. I keep hearing that there's still gold in those hills, and I expect that's true. That area up there, my understanding from listening to my relatives and all, that the gold up there is in veins, which makes you know that in a volcanic period that simply came up in a vein situation. And then, of course, the veins have gotten broken, and so they're scattered. I imagine there's gold up there. It may be too expensive to get it out. But I think that, as I remember, as I'm talking about it, my uncle used to say that those mines were going to be closed because of the water. There was no way of draining the water out when they got pretty deep. That's really all I know about it.
Is there anything else that you think of that would be of interest to historians or to people just listening to the tape that you remember of the canyon area? Skyline Drive has always been a landmark. Do you remember things about Skyline Drive? I think you mentioned that your grandmother lived somewhere up on Fay towards Skyline Drive. When we talked about the fairgrounds, is there anything back in there that you remember of?
Well, we used to, one of our favorite things in the summertime, and usually I went with some of my relatives because my dad and mother lived on a ranch, a farm, and they raised quite a few cattle and milk cows. And if you milk cows, you milk them twice a day, and you milk them in the morning and you milk them in the evening. My dad had a kind of a unwritten law that everybody got home by 4 o'clock so that the chickens could be fed and the cows could be milked. So when they would have wiener roasts and picnics up on Skyline Drive, I don't think we went up from the back side. As I remember, we went up from the front side, because this was horse and buggy days.
The front side being
front side
Canyon
being
City.
Canyon.
Yeah.
And we just turned around up there. But there were places up there where you could build a fire. I think you just, with some rocks stuck together and made a circle where you could build a fire. And I know I used to go up with my Aunt Laura and Uncle Jim and their two boys. And we would picnic and we'd have a fire and we'd sit by the fire, and that was all the light we had. Must happen to be moonlight, and we drove a horse and buggy, and then we'd get the kids to roast marshmallows and play around, and then we'd come down, and we came down the same side we went up. But horses and buggies you could always meet because they didn't take a lot of room, and you didn't have to have space for power and so forth. It was a pretty good grade up there. The horse had to really work to get up there. That was probably the most fun thing that we did on the Skyline Drive. We didn't go to the Royal Gorge very many times. That was a long ways with a horse and buggy, and it was all uphill, of course, and it wasn't fancy like it is now with paved roads and so forth. We went up a entirely different canyon from where the highway goes, and I remember two or three picnics we had up there, especially when we'd have some special company that came in for a visit, and we'd go up. But I was never up there but two or three times in all the years till I was 12. So, but I know lots of people did go up there. It was fun to look down on the railroad track, and my little sister was about 3 or 4, I suppose, and we were someplace with our parents hanging on to us tight, looking down, and a freight train came around one of the curves, and she said, "Oh, look, somebody's pushing that toy train around that hill. Where is it going to go?" And, of course, we all got a big laugh out of that. But that's just how they looked down there, just like our toy trains that we played with in our yards.
So you did have trains?
The train ran up there. In fact, my very first trip going any place after I was born, my mother brought me down. I was about 3 months old. My mother brought me down from Westcliff to Canyon City to visit her parents, and we came down through the gorge. The Hanging Bridge was there then. Of course, I don't remember that, but I know it was there. And that gorge had a lot of memories for me because we traveled it from Westcliff mostly. We'd come down on the train, and that was an easier way for us to get down than to try to drive. My dad was always busy, and lots of times I don't think he if we did come with him, we drove, but usually mother and I came down on the train, went back on the train, and we had to change Texas Creek onto the little train that ran to West Biff and just went up there and came back. And then after I was grown, in fact, the first year I taught up in the Custer County, the train was still running, and I would ride it to get down to Rocky Ford to my home. So, but they tore it out about that time. I guess that was about, I'd been around prior to 1930.
Well, that's very interesting. Did you remember of your mother saying about anything about having ridden the train back in the early 1900s when she went to taught up in that country?
When mother was teaching up, in fact, they built the railroad when mother was teaching in West Cliff. She taught the primary grades. There were two rooms in that little stone school. She had the first four grades and somebody else had the upper four grades. And there was no high school. In fact, they built a high school when I was teaching up there. And that would have been about 1924 or 5, somewhere along in there. And up to that time, when the boys and girls got out of grade school, if parents could afford it and wanted to, they sent them either down to Canyon City or some other place for high school. My cousin, Fred Baldick from Custer County, was sent up to Fort Collins, and he went, I guess by that time they had 2 years of high school in their a little bit bigger building than the one mother taught in, and I guess he went 2 years, then he went up there and went the rest of his high school and some college, and the girls, who were about his age, the sisters, one of them was a twin, came down to Mount St. Scholastica's and finished their high school down in Canyon City. And they built that high school, I guess, around 1925 or 24 or 25. They put in the 4 years of high school about then. That's not accurate, I don't think. But up to that time, getting an education was a real problem for people up in the Custer County area.
When you mentioned trains, we had been talking about toys, and you said they were like our toy trains or something, so you remember of having toy trains.
Yes, the boys had toy trains. I think Mother thought they were not quite girl material. However, I would certainly have enjoyed a train more than I did the dolls I had. I wasn't really a doll lover. But I do love children now. It wasn't a case of I had to learn how to take care of babies by cuddling my dolls, because I didn't do much of that. But I did love the boys' trains, and they were wind-ups. We didn't have electric trains, but we did have tracks, and they were just little, very simple little things that went around in an oval or an oval or a circle, and you wound them up, and they went buzzing around. And they were made of tin, I'm sure, and the engines weren't much better than the cars because they were forever falling off the tracks. And when you first wound them up, they ran real fast and fell off the tracks. And then they gradually got run down and they stayed on the tracks much better. But I did love to play with the trains, and I guess I still like trains a lot.
I thought of something else that I thought we maybe should mention or should ask you about. Oh, we had this question about, were you born in the hospital or out of the hospital? Now, you were born in Custer County.
We lived in a log house. It had, must have had four rooms in it. And it was south, a mile west and about 3 miles south of West Cliff. And the doctor, Bain, B-A-I-N, was the doctor that delivered me and was out at the house. My grandmother had always done a lot of going in and taking care of women that were having babies and taking care of babies. And in fact, she had a lot of home remedies that she practiced. And you have to remember that this was in the days when midwives and people like that were perfectly legitimate. And she came up and was with my mother when I was born and took good care of me. I was kind of slow arriving in this world, and I had to have a lot of special care when I was little. But my grandmother saw me through quite a few bad times. I had, after we moved to Canyon City, I got a hold of some river water to drink, and I got typhoid fever. And I just about died. And I guess if it hadn't been for my grandmother, it probably would have. But she came to our house and stayed and took care of me.
Did you have a doctor?
Oh, yes. Dr. Wilkinson was our doctor.
Dr. Wilkinson?
Yeah, I think it's W-I-L-K-I-N-S-O-N. I see his name around in some of the books.
W-I-L-K-I-N-S-O-N. Okay. Do you remember other doctors that may have been down here?
Dr. Brooks took care of my mother when my little sister was born. That was later than that. I don't think Dr. Wilson maybe was practicing. And then we had Dr. Graves. I liked Dr. Graves lots. Mm-hmm. He really had a good idea.
He had a hospital at one time.
Yes,
here.
His offices were in the hospital, and the hospital was, well, it's still there, and they're turning it into an apartment house or something. It was on Macon and 7th. It's across from
sixth,
the canyon.
Sixth. They call it the hole in the hospital
grocery.
Or something.
Now, they're just now changing it. It's been pretty much like it was when we were living here. My mother.
Was there more than one Dr.
Surgery.
Graves, it seems to be?
Well, later on, a son
became
a doctor, but at that the time that I was a kid, Herman C. Was the doctor. He was really a wonderful person. He had a lot of feeling for people, and I always liked to go to him because he was such a nice person. And then there was a doctor, I think Dixon, I believe it was spelled D-I-C-K-S-O-N, that was an osteopath that my mother used to go to and took me a few times. I had a bad fall off a wagon, and she took me in, and he kind of got me back, put me back together again. My back was kind of out of shape. And I can't think of the dentist's name, but there was a dentist here that we liked a lot, too, and he was here for many years.
You mentioned, and we had had a question that I think I partially ignored, did your family have home recipes or cures that they used before going to a doctor? So this comes in here very appropriately now.
My grandmother had been going around doctoring people in Missouri before she came here, and a little bit after she came out to Colorado. She didn't do as much of it. Why, she had her home cures, and some of them were pretty awful. For instance, I had lots of colds and sore throats, and she'd give me a teaspoon of sugar with one or two drops of turpentine on it, or coal oil. Now, really, the coal oil was worse than the turpentine. But it did clear your throat out. I will say it was not too bad cough medicine if you could stand the flavor. And then onion poultices were one of her strongholds. And I had croup. Well, in fact, I had it when I was 3 months old, and I had it forever more after that. And my grandmother would put those horrible onion poultices on. And well, the way she did them, she fried the onions just enough to get them so they're good and juicy. And then she'd lay them on cloth, and then she'd fasten another cloth over the top. And sometimes she'd even take a needle and thread and stitch them up. And she made them just the size to fit your chest. If your chest was little, it was little. And when you got bigger, it was bigger. And after my grandmother was gone, my mother kept it up. And I've done it for my children. So they are horrible things because they're cooky. But they would certainly cure the colds. And then they had gotten some croup medicine when I was 3 months old from Dr. Bain and up at Kent Westcliff, and they kept that prescription for years and years. And between the two things, we got along pretty good. And then there were the mustard plasters. Now, they went on your back, And when your cold got down into your lungs, why, they made these mustard plasters, and you took a little bit of mustard and quite a little bit of flour and stirred it up with water and made a paste, and you put it on cloth, and then you covered it with cloth. It was sticky enough, you didn't have to sew it up. But you could cure a lot of different things. If you had a bad headache or something, you could cure that with mustard plasters. In fact, when my youngest son was tiny, he got real bad case of bronchitis, and I put mustard plaster on him, and by the time the doctor got there, he said, "Well, you saved your baby's life, because I've got a hospital full of them, and I've lost several." He said that mustard plaster is the best thing you could have done. So you see, they still are good even now.
You think he was old-fashioned too?
Yes, I think he was. He was Italian. And that was iodine and coal oil. And my grandmother mixed that up. And you'd rub that on your throat and neck and bandage it up. Now imagine doctors nowadays say that was a poor cure, but it did the thing it was supposed to do in those days.
Don't they put off something by the name of Ibex or something? Yes. Or didn't they used to for a while?
Yeah, I think
I've used that on my kids when... they had swollen glands and things of that kind.
I know it's still on the market.
I think it probably is. So I guess this was the forerunner.
It's a mild thing compared to coal oil and iodine that my grandmother stirred up. But anyway, we didn't go to the doctor too often because Grandma usually knew all the good remedies to...
Do you know what she did for bad cuts or burns or something of that kind?
Well, she put turpentine on them.
Turpentine.
On cuts. And it did keep them from getting infected and wrap them up. Of course, we didn't have Band-Aids or anything like that in those days. You just put she always kept clean, sterile sheets wrapped up in papers. And she would never put them in anything but a brown paper bag or something like that, not newspapers, because they wouldn't be sterile.
You'd have lead poisoning.
Yes. And she'd cut off a piece or tear off a piece and wrap your finger up and tie it real tight with thread. And she'd take it off and look at it, and doctor if needed to be. And she used iodine on those kind of places, but she thinned it down some way with something so that it wasn't full strength. But usually you got cured up.
Did they use lard for something? It seems to me that I've heard something about a lard remedy. Was that what they maybe thinned
some of
the stuff with?
Yes. Well, you see, we didn't have... Vicks vapor rub or any of those kind of things at all in those days, and they would mix lard and turpentine and put that on. That was before you got to the onion poultices, and you weren't quite so sick.
That was an easy remedy, huh?
Yes, it wasn't too bad because the lard would stay warm on your body, so it never got hard or anything. It was a pretty good cure. Well, I was sick a lot, and so my grandmother was always coming to my rescue and getting me healed up again.
Well, we are getting kind of toward the end of the tape, and so I think we need to kind of wrap it up. There are several questions that we could cover. Do you remember of there being special gatherings for art or music or anything in the canyon area? Do you remember whether there was anything of that kind?
Mr. Roberson, I think it was Roberson, that brought slideshows of some kind around once in a while. I don't know if he came every year or how often, but it was at night. My mother used to come in and stay with my grandmother and aunt and take me to see those. They were the most wonderful things. I remember the ones on the Panama Canal when they were starting to build it. And to me, that was just about the most fascinating thing I'd ever seen. And I could hardly wait for Mr. Roberson to come around again.
Was this in a church or an auditorium?
I think they had it at one of the churches. In fact, I think maybe they had it at the Methodist Church, but it was for everybody. And then the bell ringers used to come from someplace. And Mother would always bring me in for that. That was another night thing. And night things were a problem because we lived 5 miles out and had to drive a horse and buggy. And our horse with a buggy, and she didn't like to go, father didn't like her to go either in the dark at night, so she'd come in before it got dark and stay all night with my aunt and grandmother, and then my aunt and she and I would go, and after we had my little sister, my grandmother used to keep her because she wasn't big enough to enjoy them. And so those were the big moments of our lives, but people didn't go to things in those days like they do now.
You mentioned you came back and worked in Canyon City Library. Was there anything interesting, of particular interest about that, or what do you do when you're in Canyon now? I know you travel a good deal.
I always wanted to be a librarian. I wanted to be a librarian when I was in junior high. I wanted to be a librarian when I was in high school, and I worked in the library when I was in high school. I wanted to be a librarian. And the two closest places you could get library study was either in Chicago or Los Angeles. Number one, we couldn't afford it. And number two, that was far away from home. My parents didn't approve of it, and I think maybe I didn't either, because I think that sounded too far away to go. So I didn't. They had 6 hours of library just for school, getting you ready to do school library up in Greeley, and I took those courses. Then I just went into teaching and never... Oh, I always had a library, and I usually had cards, check things out to kids, and I had quite a bit of library stuff of my own I'd check out to children, and always was interested in what happened for children. I paid more attention to that than anything else. And then when I came up here, to Canyon City, back up here, why, I worked in the city library and did the children's library there and did story hour. And we got to the point where we had about 30 youngsters in our story hours.
That was about what year?
It was in the early
70s. 72.
Let's see. I don't...
So it didn't make that much difference, but early 70s
is
fine.
It was in the early 70s.
You have grandchildren?
Oh, I have... Well, I have 9 grandchildren, and then I have 20 great-grandchildren. And so I've become a very productive grandmother. And I go around and visit them. And you see, when you have that many great-grandchildren, you can spend quite a bit of your time going around visiting.
You can run your own library with them, can't you?
I do. I found out that the best thing I do is when I go is to coach their educations. It seems as though children have gotten awfully careless with writing and putting numbers down and all that kind of thing, and teachers sometimes I don't think are as strict as I think they ought to be. So sometimes I work on that kind of thing, always working with the youngsters in the family and making things for them and writing letters to them and just enjoy my children and grandchildren, great-grandchildren immensely.
Now, we certainly do want to thank you, and this, of course, will be...